Yeah. We know medical care requires informed consent, but laws require informed consent. Politics, entrepreneurship, how you engage in your diet, health, exercise, even relationships. These all require a place of being informed. And I am so sick of being called a conspiracy theorist for using my brain and being informed. So that's how this podcast came to life. This is Informed Consent. I am your host, Brooke Bocci. Let's start talking. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Informed Consent. I am so excited to be joined again this week with someone who was with us just about a year ago around this time, and I'm excited to bring him back on the show to talk about a topic that I have never yet discussed on the show. It's a topic that I have had high on my list and high on my priority list to talk about because I feel it is so incredibly important. And when just talking through topics with this guest, I knew he was the perfect fit to bring this conversation to you guys. And that's a conversation about genes and gene mutations and how it plays such a huge role in our health and wellness. And I don't want to go into too much now because I know he has so much to share. So I want to introduce Dr. Nick. He was on the show, like I said, about a year ago. He is my husband and I's chiropractor, functional medicine doctor, and truly just a great friend. He has been there through us, through so much of our fertility journey and our health journeys, and has made the biggest impact of any other person that we've worked with. And so we are truly blessed to know Nick, to work with Nick, and to call him our friend. And I'm just so excited to have him back on the show to share his wisdom and his knowledge with you guys and to talk specifically about genes and all the things that comes through it. But in case you didn't hear from him before, I want to introduce him again. So Dr. Nick grew up in Sterling Heights, Michigan, where he received his undergrad from the University of Detroit, Bercy in biology. Growing up, he always knew he wanted to dedicate his life to educating people on what true health and healing really is. While pursuing a master's degree in biomedical sciences at Wayne State University, he learned that the United States consumes 60% of the world's drugs, yet we rank 37th out of 39th industrialized countries in terms of the health of the population. There are 25 million pills consumed in every hour of every day. This was an absolutely huge eye-opener for Nick. Every class period, he was bombarded with these kinds of statistics and complications people could experience if they took these types of medications. He soon realized that there is a time and a place for drugs and realized that you cannot produce health by taking pills to treat disease because this does not address the core issues and what's really going on. It's just simply masking a problem. He wanted to study health and how to create it rather than study disease and how to treat it. That's how he discovered chiropractic care. He then moved to Marietta, Georgia, where he completed his 4 years in the Doctor of Chiropractic program at Life University. During this time, he was certified in two of the most advanced upper cervical techniques in chiropractic, known as the Atlas Orthogonal and the Pierce Result System. These techniques are a cutting-edge analysis and technology to deliver chiropractic in a scientific and reproducible manner, with none of the twisting, cracking, or popping noises. So Dr. Nick, thanks so much for being another guest on Informed Consent. Just like you were last year, I'm super excited to have you back on. And I'm really, really excited for this conversation that we're going to have today.
Yes, I am super, super pumped for this. Yeah.
So I know you were on last year, but for those who haven't listened to you and don't know too much about you, can you just give a little bit of background of kind of who you are and how you've gotten to the point in your career where you are now?
Yeah, so absolutely. So Dr. Nick, I've been practicing upper cervical chiropractic for almost 7 years now. So it's been a long journey there. And then I found my way into functional medicine. And the reason why I got into functional medicine, because, you know, growing up, I ate like such a poor diet. You know, my parents were always feeding me, you know, pop at dinner and brownies, cookies, stuff like that. And I always felt like crap, right? And I was like, by the end of the day, I was just like totally drained and I just needed more and more and more sugar. And I got to a point where I needed to do something to feel better. And I was like 16 years old, right? And I'm like, why am I feeling like this? And that's kind of when I started like looking into like more of the natural holistic stuff. I started juicing. I started changing my diet. And that's when I felt my best. And then I was like, this is what I need to be doing. Because if you look at like people these days, you know, you You go to the store, you look at their grocery carts and, you know, see what they're putting into them. And it just wants, it made me want to teach people how to understand and go about like eating the right way and doing the proper testing for people so that they can function at their best.
I love that. So you do chiropractic care and you do functional medicine and you're located here in Michigan. Is that correct?
Yes, we are located in Sterling Heights, Michigan, right off of Hall Road in Hayes. We've been here for about 2 years, practiced in West Bloomfield for a little bit when I first started, when I got into practice. And then we just purchased a practice about a couple years ago. We love the building here and love all our clients and everything as well, too.
Awesome. So obviously we had you on last year and we really dove into functional medicine and what that was. For those who are listening who didn't get a chance to listen to that episode, I will link that episode in the show notes. So if you want to kind of go back and listen to what functional medicine is and a little bit more about Nick and his chiropractic experience, I will include that in there. But you know, as I talked about in the bio, we're going to talk about genes and gene mutations specifically in this episode. And it's such a fascinating conversation to be had because it's something that I just feel is so unaddressed. And I'm really excited to hear from you and just hear from your experience clinically and what you've learned and what you've researched on the different gene mutations. So I guess before we get into it, can you just kind of explain like what are gene mutations and how, like, why is this even an important conversation for us to be discussing today?
Yeah, for sure. So very, very important stuff here. And I think everyone should get a genetic test at some point in their life. So basically, you know, when you're looking at gene mutations, they're basically alterations. They're changes in a DNA sequence that can basically lead to variations in the instructions for making certain proteins, which are central for the functioning of our cells and our body as a whole, right? So I kind of like to think of a gene mutation as, you know, you can think of it like an error in a book's manuscript, right? So just like that typo can change the meaning of a sentence, that gene mutation alters the instructions encoded in our DNA, affecting, you know, how proteins are made and ultimately how our bodies are functioning. So just as an editor would correct typos to ensure the book conveys the intended message, in functional medicine, we want to understand and we want to address those gene mutations to help us tailor, you know, specific approaches to better suit, you know, people's needs, kind of like when someone edits a book. All right. So very, very important stuff.
What, like, I guess, how do you get these gene mutations? Like, is it something that you develop? Are you born with them? Like, how do you get these?
Yeah. So basically, there's breaks in mutations. So when we do the genetic testing, it's kind of cool because we can see there's different colors. I wish I could show you like a map of a gene test. Maybe we can do a different podcast where we can go through like a whole gene map. But, you know, we can see if you have a genetic mutation either from one parent or both parents, right? And it's really, really cool. And then that way they know like, hey, this person has a genetic mutation from both of the parents, so both of the parents would know that they have that gene mutation. Now, as far as like, how did this happen, right? To me, it's more of a lifestyle thing. You know, you got to look at multiple factors, diet, inflammation, you know, if someone's smoking could damage those DNA sequences and it can alter the function of our bodies. So that's kind of how those genes kind of come about. I think lifestyle is huge.
Interesting. So would you say like in a situation where it's passed on from both parents, is that more of like, I guess you could say an intense gene mutation versus like if you have one, like yes, just one passed on? Okay. Okay.
Yes, for sure. So let's say, for instance, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but let's say both parents have the MTHFR gene mutation and you know that, right? Basically what happens is, you know, that gene isn't working at all, right? So you have to make sure that you're supplementing and you're doing the right thing so that we can kind of get that gene working a little bit better overall. So yeah, if you have both copies from both parents, it pretty much doesn't work at all. If you have just one of the copies, it works, but it doesn't work 100% of the time. It works about 40% of the time.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So you mentioned MTHFR, and I know that's one that's probably the most talked about one, but yep, what would you say are some common gene mutations that you want to talk about today and that really should be brought to our attention?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, I want to talk about a few that we see a lot in our practice. I actually just went over methylation cycle with someone today, and they had the MTHFR gene from both parents. They had the COMT gene, which is another big gene. And then they had the MTFF gene as well, too, which is a very common gene as well, too. And we can talk about all three of these things as well, too.
Okay. Very, very interesting. And I guess, so you said you were going over someone's test of it. So like, how do you test for these gene mutations?
So the test is pretty easy. Basically, when we do the testing, we have the kits here at the office. I'm sure you can find like some kits online and stuff like that. So basically what you do is there's two test tubes that come inside of this kit. And what you do is you take, there's a swab in both of the test tubes. So you basically just take the swabs out, you swab the inside of the cheek, and then you put it back in the test tube, send it out to the lab. It takes about a week and a half to kind of come back. And then what we do is we look at the methylation cycle. So it tests about, I would say about 7 genes down that methylation pathway. So very, very easy to test for it. If someone specifically just wants, let's say, the MTHFR gene mutation, and you've got, did you get it done, Brooke? I don't remember when we did your blood work, if you got that done.
We pretty much assumed I had the MTHFR just because of my methylation pathways, and my dad actually has the MTHFR. So yep. I at least know I have it from him. It's just a matter of whether I got it from my mom, but it's something Joe and I want, we need to do. It's on our list.
Absolutely, for sure. So yeah, basically you can also do a blood test. Quest Diagnostics does a genetic test for the MTHFR gene break. So you can get it done through Quest. In my opinion, it's better to just do the whole cycle, especially if you have a lot of issues going on. So in my opinion, just do the genetic swab. It's a little bit more accurate as well, too.
And with the testing, is it something that like you test once and that's all you need? Or do you keep retesting kind of like blood work to see where you're at with things?
Yeah, that's a good question. So basically with the gene mutations, we want to just test it one time. And then obviously we do a ton of blood work, right? So we'll look at like all of the vitamin levels, like B12, for instance. If someone's low in B12, then we know that they may potentially have the MTHFR gene mutation. It could also be that they have that MTFF gene mutation as well, too. Homocysteine is another big one, too. And this is a marker that a lot of medical doctors aren't testing for, is homocysteine. And when those levels are elevated, then we know you probably have the MTHFR gene as well, too. And we'll talk about that more as well as we go through this.
Yeah. So let's highlight, you had mentioned 3 different gene mutations. So do you mind taking a moment just kind of explaining what those 3 gene mutations, and maybe talk a little bit sciencey, and then maybe at the end, dumb it down to like for make sure. It as simple as we can explain it.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll start off with the MTHFR gene, because it's one of the more common genes. And believe it or not, it's at about 40 to 44% of the population. And now when we're looking at the gene sequence of the MTHFR, the MTHFR gene is actually on the bottom of that sequence, and it actually helps convert one of the most prevalent things in the standard American diet, which is folic acid, into the usable form, which is 5-methylfolate. Now, why might you care about this process, right? If you look at the standard American diet, folic acid is one of the most common things that Americans consume in their diet. The grain supply, so you have all white flour, you have all white rice, you have white pastas, you have grains, cereals. These are all sprayed with a chemical, folic acid. I think in the 90s they started spraying all of our grain supply with the folic acid. And folic acid is actually considered a chemical because it doesn't occur anywhere in nature. It's made in a lab. And the food industry they're doing a nice job at hiding this in labels. So basically, they can call folic acid, they can call it enriched or fortified, and it's in so many different products. It's absolutely crazy. So all you got to do, like I tell people, is just turn the box around. If you're eating a certain food and if it's enriched or fortified, it most likely has that folic acid in it. Now, people that don't have that genetic break, it might not be a huge deal, but the 40 to 44% of the population that does have the gene break, that mutation, they won't be able to convert folic acid and make that usable form. And what happens is you have that huge uptake of folic acid at high amounts that their body can't metabolize or break down. And now they have this deficiency of methylfolate that their body needs for specific processes and for other genes upstream to work. So yeah, it's a huge issue right now in the American population, because if you look at it too, folic acid, the enriched and fortified are banned in some countries as well too. So
yeah, it's funny. I was having this conversation with somebody because I'm just super heavy into the MTHFR gene mutation. I mean, I myself have noticed just from learning that, like, I have it, even if I just have it from my dad. I mean, the textbook symptoms of MTHFR is like me through and through. But I was talking about it with someone and, you know, they were just saying, I was just in Italy and I ate all the bread and all the pasta. And I was like happy. And I came home and I had the same foods and I felt depressed and like blah, and I couldn't concentrate. Yeah. It's because of the gluten. And my mind is like, no, I actually think it's because of the folic acid, because these other countries don't use it.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, we went to France, right before I graduated, and Natalie has a gluten sensitivity and she may potentially have the MTHFR gene. She wants to get tested for it, but whenever she eats gluten, she has a ton of anxiety. And this is a huge, huge symptom for the MTHFR gene, is a ton of people that have it have anxiety. You know, I ask them, you know, when I'm going through my intake with them, I said, do you know the trigger of your anxiety? And most of the times people, they don't know what's triggering it, right? And that's a sign that you have the MTHFR gene break as well too. So yeah, it's very interesting. When you go over to Europe, you can eat that stuff, it won't affect you at all. But when you come back here, just because that has that folic acid in it, and especially if you have that gene break, you're going to be, like I said, the folic acid in the body is just going to be at an extreme number, and then your body can't work the way it should work.
OBGYNs, and you know, they recommend folic acid in prenatals. How does that make sense if folic acid isn't absorbed by 44% of the population?
Yeah, exactly. That's another huge issue. And the lady that I was discussing her gene testing actually told me that her daughter was pregnant, right? And I told her, I said, she potentially has the MTHFR gene. So you need to make sure that you send me over her prenatal that she's taking, because I want to make sure that it doesn't have folic acid in it. Because if you look at it, you know, you look at some prenatals, they have extremely high amounts, like 1000% of your daily value of folic acid in it. And that's why, in my opinion, women are having, you know, postpartum depression after they have their babies, because they have so much folic acid and they can't methylate into the usable form, and they're having all these issues. That goes back to, you know, you can't calm the mind down, you can't calm the brain down. And these women are extremely, extremely depressed. So yeah, very, very common issue. So when you're pregnant, and you know this too, you want to make sure that you're taking a methyl tetrahydrofolate supplement. You don't want to take a folic acid, which blows my mind that all these medical doctors are still telling women to take folic acid.
And what would you like, why do you think that these medical doctors are saying that? Like, what do you think, like, what is their reason? Do you know what the reasoning of why they should take folic acid and not folate? Or maybe they aren't necessarily saying don't take folate, but like, what's the reasoning behind folic acid?
The doctors are giving women folic acid. They want women to take folic acid because if you look at the research, it shows that if you take the folic acid, it prevents neural tube defects. But if you really dive deep into the research, these women should be taking a methyl tetrahydrofolate because, you know, if you look at it, like I said, 44% of the population has this gene break. And if you're taking folic acid, it's going to spike, right? And then it's going to lead to issues, not only with baby's development, but the postpartum symptoms that the women are having these days. And it's just so much more common for women to have postpartum depression and all these other issues after having baby. And it could be coming from that uptick in that folic acid that they're ingesting through their prenatal.
Right. And what I think is important to address too, which I know we did, but it's like when you are consuming the folic acid and you're consuming it in such mass quantities, even in our food supply, you're also becoming deficient in folate, because our bodies who can't methylate it, who can't turn folic acid into the usable form of the body, methylfolate, you know, you can't, so then you become deficient in folate. And could you kind of explain what that specific nutrient does for the body?
folate's very important because basically it plays a role in maintaining the health of the intestinal lining and supporting the function of cells that we have in our digestive tract. And when we can't make that folate, because we have that gene mutation, those linings, specifically the epithelial linings, aren't going to be working the way that they should and can essentially cause an inflammatory reaction. So if you have like a food sensitivity, right, those foods can cause more of an inflammatory reaction because that folate, you know, isn't being used the way that it should be being used. And you're going to have an issue with the lining of the digestive tract, hence leaky gut, right? So causing a lot of inflammation in people.
Wow. So what would you say for someone who's listening to this, who's wondering if this would apply to them? Like, what would you say are some symptoms? I guess I don't know if it would be symptoms or like just some like red flags that you might have the MTHFR gene mutation.
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing, like I said, anxiety, really, really big one, especially the people that don't know where the anxiety is coming from. If you take an anxiety medication and that anxiety medication is making you feel like a complete zombie, like you don't want to do anything, you just want to sit at home, don't talk to anyone, that's another specific trigger for the MTHFR gene. That's another sign for it. In kids, this is something that's very common, is kids have a very hard time focusing, right? So kids that have ADD, ADHD, very common that they have that MTHFR gene mutation. And it's crazy to think about it with kids because, you know, what are we feeding our kids in the morning? You know, you have 2, 3, 4 kids, right? You're trying to get out of the house. You're trying to get them to school because you have to get to work, right? So you're going to be eating something quick, right? You're going to be eating a bagel. You're going to be eating a Pop-Tart. You can have bread with their eggs, right? What does all that stuff have in it, right? Has folic acid. Mm-hmm. Right? And if they have that gene where they can't take folic acid and make folate, they're going to have that uptick in folic acid, right? And then midday, you're going to be getting a call from the principal or the school saying, hey, your kid's having a hard time focusing. He's disrupting the class. Maybe if you just cut out, you know, some of those inflammatory things, then the kids can function better. I always tell parents if the kids have that genetic break, just cut those things out for a few days and see how they respond. And most of the time, they respond really, really well. The parents notice that they're more calm. They focus a lot better in school when they're doing their homework when they get home. So that's another very common thing, behavioral issues in kids. They're actually doing a lot of studies on the MTHFR gene, and it could be potentially causing some Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's. So the good thing about doing these tests is we can prevent things from happening. So, and we can supplement with certain things to help that break, essentially.
So yeah, let's kind of go into that. So we'll hit all the bases with this gene and then we'll just kind of go down to the other one. So what would you say if you were someone with the MTHFR gene mutation or who suspects that they have it, what would you say are some lifestyle changes or just some supplementations or things that they can add into their life to support this gene break?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, when I see someone that has the MTHFR gene mutation, I always give them methylated forms of B vitamins, right? And specifically a B vitamin that has that methyl tetrahydrofolate in it and like 2000% of it, because especially if the person has both copies of the gene and that gene's not working at all, we really have to make sure that we're supplementing with that active form of folate so that those bodily processes can work properly and they can function at their best, essentially. As far as diet goes, we really want to make sure that we're cutting out all of those enriched and fortified foods. We could start eating, you know, things that have more folate in them. I know you're doing carnivore. Basically, you know, we want to make sure that you're getting like broccoli, asparagus, beets have a lot of folate in them. There's so many foods that have folate, but you have to make sure also when you're eating these foods, you want to make sure that they're clean, right? Because here in the United States, they spray them with a ton of pesticides, and that's just going to add on to your problem. So Dirty Dozen, Clean 15, if you don't know what that is, look it up. Make sure when you're shopping, organic, Dirty Dozen, you want to make sure that you're getting organic. Clean 15, those are the things you don't have to get organic. So if you're trying to save money at the grocery store and stuff like that, that's a good list to follow.
Yeah. I think that's important. And I think that, you know, with this mutation, especially keeping your eye out for that folic acid, like you said earlier, it's not going to sit there and say folic acid on a lot of your ingredients. So you want to look for those words fortified or enriched. If it says those, it's sprayed with folic acid. And also if you, especially if you have the gene mutation and you're going to look for grains or you're going to get non-produce foods like boxed foods or breads, just make sure you try to shoot for organic because there's no folic acid in anything that's organic because it's a synthetic, because it's, you know, it's not real, like it's not made in nature. And so because of that, anything that has organic, correct me if I'm wrong, will not have folic acid.
Right. Correct. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because you know, like I said, they spray a lot of the stuff, and then you know when you're eating like white rice too. I know that's kind of a staple for people. You have to make sure that your white rice is organic, because like I said, it's sprayed with a ton of folic acid. And another thing too, it's ridden with you know, arsenic's another big one too that we see in our practice as far as heavy metals go, and that's because people eat a lot of white rice, especially when they're going out to restaurants and stuff.
Right. Gotta love our sushi.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Awesome. All right, cool. So is there anything else on MTHFR that you want to talk about before we move on to the next one?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Like I said, you got to keep in mind that the MTHFR gene, it's one of the earliest genes in the whole methylation sequence of genes. So when you have that mutation, it can cause other symptoms down the line that don't necessarily come from the MTHFR gene itself, but they come from the inability of that gene specifically to kind of like supply that raw material to the other genes that are upstream that we can talk about right now.
Okay. And I guess before we get into those, in just very layman's basic terms, can you explain what methylation means?
Yeah. So methylation is just making sure that you're taking the inactive form and turning it into the usable form so that your body can process it. Right. So, you know, for instance, like estrogen, you know, if you're not methylating estrogen properly, it can become toxic because you can't break that estrogen down. Right. So that's what methylation essentially is we want to break it down into the usable form and use those things properly so the body can thrive essentially.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, so that basically makes sense. Obviously with MTHFR, you can't take the folic acid, which is synthetic and turn it into the usable form of the body, which is 5-methylfolate.
Correct. Yep. Correct.
Correct. Wonderful. Let's go on to the next gene mutation and kind of just go through the same questions with that, because that was really helpful learning about the MTHFR.
Yeah, for sure. So the next, and I'm just doing these genes because this is what I saw earlier. So just kind of make it a little bit easier. So the next one that we see upstream from the MTHFR gene is that MTRR gene. And what this gene does for us, and everyone has these genes too, it's just if we have a break, then we're going to have some issues. So if the MTRR gene, basically what it does is it helps convert the amino acid homocysteine into methionine. Okay. Now, if you have a break here, you're going to have elevated levels of homocysteine, right? Because you can't take homocysteine and convert it to methionine, right? So now if your homocysteine is elevated in the body, it can lead to a ton of cardiovascular problems such as high blood pressure. You know, your heart can be racing, plaque buildup in the arterial walls. And I like to explain to my clients. So if you look at my dad was a plumber. So if you think about it, in a closed pipe system, if you increase the pressure in that closed system, the pipes are going to burst, right? Same thing with if you have high homocysteine levels, when it's elevated, what that's going to do is it's going to clamp down on the arterial walls and it's going to drive your pressure up in that closed system and you're going to have elevated blood pressure. Now, what do medical doctors do when you go in for high blood pressure, right? They want to give you a blood pressure lowering medication. When if the medical doctors just tested for this specific gene, they could essentially wean people off of medication or not prescribe it at all, right? By giving them the right things. And specifically for this, you know, homocysteine level to drop, we want to make sure that you're taking a methylcobalamin, which is a methylated form, a vitamin that helps that conversion to actually happen. Okay.
This is all so fascinating. I'm not too familiar with this gene mutation, so I'm totally learning. So what For someone with this gene mutation, like what would be a symptom, or I guess is symptom even the right word for this, or what would be something that could like show that someone has this gene mutation?
Yeah. So basically, like I said, like a big one is high blood pressure. That's a huge one, because you can't, you know, convert the homocysteine to the methionine. So people that have, you know, cardiovascular trouble, or another big one is like really trying to calm the mind down. Methionine really does that for us. And when you can't convert enough, you have trouble like sleeping at night pretty much when you have this gene. So that's a big symptom. And another thing too is, you know, people are taking multivitamins, right? And in these multivitamins, they don't have the methylated forms. This, specifically if you're buying them at like, you know, Target, Walmart, CVS, they have a B12 form. It's called cyanocobalamin. That is so toxic for the body. It's basically from hydrogen cyanide, right? And they use hydrogen cyanide to make chemical weapons in the war. So we want to stay away from those toxic vitamins, especially if you have these gene mutations, because it's going to alter, you know, how your homocysteine is getting regulated through the body, and it's going to lead to problems essentially down the line. So I always tell people, if you have a supplement with cyanocobalamin, a non-methylated form of B12, throw the thing in the garbage. Another big one is like magnesium oxide. That's a very common thing in the standard multivitamin, just not a good form of magnesium, right? So you want to make sure you're taking like a magnesium citrate or magnesium glycinate, depending on what's going on with you, right? So yeah, it's just people aren't educated, and they think they need to take a multivitamin, but they're actually creating more toxicity in their body. So we have to make sure we're supplementing with the right things as well too.
So is there, just like how with the MTHFR, obviously the supplementation is an issue, but what about like, is there certain foods that increases that homocysteine that can affect the, you know, the different levels in your body?
Oh, I'm not sure if, obviously like, you know, inflammatory foods, again, going back to like, you know, like gluten, dairy, those are big things that cause cardiovascular issues with people. So I'm not too familiar with like the foods that elevate the homocysteine levels.
Okay.
But I can almost assume it's the foods with, you know, the folic acid in them, again, cause that's going to essentially alter, that gene upstream as well too.
Okay. So this is definitely more of a mutation that's more supplementation.
Yeah.
Like noted versus like food noted. Because obviously with MTHFR, yes, if you're taking a folic acid supplement, but there's folic acid in a lot of our foods. Whereas with this one, it's more of just, hey, keep your eye out for, you know,
cyanocobalamin.
And what other ones do they want to keep their eye out for?
Cyanocobalamin is a big one. Folic acid in the multivitamins, magnesium oxide. Those are just like terrible forms of the vitamin for you. I mean, you might as well throw them in the garbage, because they're not doing anything for you. One, your body can't absorb them properly. And two, they're toxic, right? They're going to cause issues, more issues with those genetic breaks that people tend to have.
Perfect. Awesome. So again, what do people want to now look for? So we're staying away from those. What are they looking for, especially if they have this gene mutation?
Yeah, it's a methylcobalamin that they want to look for. Yeah.
Cool. So that's an interesting one. I've never really learned much about that. So it just makes you think, you know, this is a question I had, but I let's just get into it now. Like you talked about the blood pressure and doctors, like, why do you think that the Western medicine, modern medicine, why they're not addressing these gene mutations? I mean, to me, it just sounds so simple. Like you have this gene mutation, like making sure you're avoiding this, you know, looking for this, and you're going to be better. But like, why, you know, because I know from my experience, me having the MTHFR, when I talk to people who are in the medical field, like a nurse practitioner, a doctor, whomever that may be, they look at me like, okay, like that's not really an issue. But I mean, it is. So why do you think that it's not addressed in standard medicine?
You know, I personally, I think it's because they're not teaching it in medical school. Medical schools, and I know a really a doctor that he's very big, Dr. Brownstein. I'm pretty good friends with him, but he's a medical doctor. He practiced medicine. He got out of it because he was so frustrated with it. And he told me that when he was in school, they literally, all they taught him was about disease, right? How to treat the disease with medication. And that's pretty much it. They didn't look at any genes. They didn't look at nutrition. I don't think they study nutrition at all. It might be changing. I hope it is. And I hope that they're talking more about these genetic breaks and different testing to do as well too. But I think it goes back to the pharmaceutical industry as well too. And the pharmaceutical industry is controlling like what's being taught at medical school. And I don't know if they want to teach this stuff because they won't make money.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It goes back to that as well.
Unfortunately, there's no money in healthy people.
Right. For sure. And I think hopefully that, you know, there's so many things you can do with genes too. I know like a lot of doctors look for the BRCA gene, which is big for breast cancer. And that's great. I love that. Yeah. You know, some doctors do that because my mom had breast cancer. But it all goes back to why is that happening? Right. And what can you do to refrain that from happening? And that goes back to, you know, doing the right things as far as diet and supplementation goes. So, and that's where right. I think the message needs to be conveyed a little bit better by the medical community, even if they are doing, you know, genetic studies.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. So, okay, let's get into the last gene mutation, the gene break that you wanted to talk about. I would love to hear about that one.
Yeah, the last one that I want to talk about is it's a COMT gene. That's like the last one in the sequence. So, basically, with that one, the COMT gene actually helps downregulate all of our neurotransmitters. So our neurotransmitters are epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, serotonin. So basically, that gene helps kind of downregulate those things. And if you can't downregulate your neurotransmitters, those people are going to be stuck in fight or flight constantly, right? Those people can't not calm the mind down at all. They're always go, go, go. So that's a big player. Now, if you have this type of gene break, what's going to happen is you have to supplement with it's called SAMe, okay? Because SAMe helps that, you know, down regulation of those neurotransmitters. So that's one of the things that if I do see this COMT gene in someone, I will give them SAMe to take just so that they can kind of down regulate the fight or flight neurotransmitters essentially.
Okay. And just like kind of what the other ones, the question I asked was, is there something that makes this worse? Like a certain food, a certain supplement, a certain ingredient that makes it worse? Or is it just not necessarily the need of something or the overuse of something, but maybe just the need of something?
Yeah, that goes like the inflammation and the diet, like, so, you know, all processed foods are going to affect this gene, you know, okay. Like we keep saying, you know, that the folic acid ridden foods, the fortified, the enriched, any type of processed food is going to really impact, you know, this genetic break. So we really want to make sure that we're, you know, looking to see if you have it first. And if you do have it, then we really want to make sure we're supplementing with that SAMe so we can really downregulate those transmitters there.
So, and then is there anything like that we want to look out for in our supplements to make sure that's not in our supplements? Or is this, like I said, more of just one where you just have to make sure you add that SAMe?
Yeah, this is one where we just kind of add the SAMe. There's not really any supplements that you have to watch out for. I mean, you still don't want to take the ones that we just talked about because it can impact that. Because this is actually one of the last parts of that methylation pathway from the MTHFR gene. So the MTHFR gene, it's one of the easier ones to address and fix. But the COMT one's a little bit harder. You have to really supplement with that SAMe for a long period of time. If you have that genetic break, essentially at the COMT gene.
Okay. Do you find in just like your experience and even just what you know, if you have one of the mutations, you have a lot of them, or is it more of just like you kind of have one here and there? Like, do you find if you have one, you tend to have more?
Not necessarily. I've seen, you know, people where they just have the MTHFR gene. They don't have any of the other genes upstream. Like the person today, she had all three of the ones we just talked about. I've seen someone that had every single gene mutation down the pathway. So it all depends. I don't know, you know, that one necessarily causes the others to kind of flare up. But yeah, it's kind of all over the board when we do the testing and everything. So yeah, that was a good question.
Okay. So any other last kind of things you want to touch on with the specific gene mutations that we didn't address?
No, I think that's it. I think we covered a lot.
Yeah, we did. So a couple more just kind of wrap up questions that I have for you. First is, if someone wants to get tested, I know you had shared some testing options, but I know you do this testing and I think, I mean, I'm sure you can agree with this. I think it's important if you do get the testing that you are working with a professional who can guide you in the right directions and tell you what you need to look for and what supplements you should have, because it is hard to read those things. So I want you to kind of share how people can get tested through you and work through you. Obviously, yes, we both live here in Michigan. I have listeners in 66 different countries, you know, so is this something that like people, if they want to get tested, could get tested through you and work through you virtually, or kind of how does that work? How could someone kind of get started with testing if they're interested?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I do like multiple clients in other states. I have a couple people in South Carolina. I have some people in Florida. I have someone in California. So basically we just do Zoom meetings with these people. I'm sure there's functional medicine practitioners in their area that maybe potentially do genetic testing. So, you know, if you live in a different state and you're listening to this, you know, maybe find someone near you, or, you know, if you want to reach out to us, you're more than welcome to. We can do a Zoom meeting. But yeah, I think it's very important and proper testing. And I think everyone should do this test along with proper blood work. That way you can really hone in on what you're deficient in and what your body needs so that it can thrive. So it can go through all those processes without any interference. Right. So, yeah. If anyone listening to this wants to reach out and work with us, we're more than happy to. And obviously, you want to make sure that you're doing it with a functional medicine doctor or someone that does the genetic mutation testing, just so that, you know, you're not doing the wrong things. You're not supplementing with the wrong things, making things worse.
For sure. So how can people connect with you? Can you share with them? And I will link it all in the show notes for those listening as well. But can you share like website, phone number, social media sites, anywhere that people can connect with you?
Yeah, for sure. So our website is nextgenchiropractic.net. Our phone number, our front desk staff is awesome with scheduling appointments and stuff like that. So our phone number at the office is 586-209-4236. And then my handle on Instagram, which I'm sure you'll link on the page, it's the Atlas Doc. So we post a lot of like good things on functional medicine and, you know, give people, you know, tips and stuff on there. So if you give me a follow on Instagram, that would be awesome. So you can learn, not just about the genetic stuff, but, more about other, you know, testing that we do and what you should be doing as far as lifestyle and diet goes as well too.
Awesome. And yes, I will link all of that in the show notes so you guys can quickly access and click those and definitely be sure to give him a follow. So last question for you, Dr. Nick, what would you say 1 to 3 things if you could recommend somebody to just help them live an optimal, high quality life that's in their best health? I know maybe 1 to 3 things is minor, but just key things that people can be doing right now to really just live their best life.
Yeah, for sure. So the number one thing is clear out as much toxicity from your life, whether it be chemicals, whether it be emotional stress, whether it be physical stress as well too. So you want to make sure that you're cutting all those toxicities out and doing the right things, you know, like even just a simple thing like cutting gluten out or getting a food sensitivity test like you guys just did, and cutting out all those foods that are causing all of the inflammation in the body. You will feel a ton better, even if you don't do any testing or anything else, right? Just cut out all of the inflammatory stuff from your body, all of the emotional stressors too. So, you know, yoga, meditation, sauna, cold plunging, eating a proper diet. Those are all like key things you really want to make sure that you're doing so you can kind of keep your body in check so it's not being stressed out at all times.
I love that. I think that's so important to think about too. I think people think stress, they think just like the actual stress of their day. And there's so right. many more stressors to our life, from the foods yeah. to our lifestyles to environment. So I think that I yeah. think that's a very, very good tip. And you'd be amazed at what, how life can change when you eliminate the stressors, for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Emotional stress is a huge, huge factor as well too. So if you can, you know, cut out all of those toxic emotions. Oh, that's very key. Very, very key. So your body doesn't always go into fight or flight.
Right. Awesome. Well, Dr. Nick, thanks so much for joining Informed Consent. Again, it's always such a pleasure. And I'm sure we will have you back for another episode because you just have so much value and knowledge to share. So thanks again for joining.
Thank you so much, Brooke, for having me on the podcast. We will talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Have a good rest of your day. And thanks for tuning in to another episode of Informed Consent.